So this morning we're going to pursue the same theme that you guys were in your morning Bible studies, most of you. And it was dealing with what? Christian conduct, all right? Our teachers know. Do the students know? So you were looking at Paul's life and how he conducted himself, and we looked through his letter there to the Thessalonians and tried to understand some ways that Christians conduct themselves. We're also going to be using one of Paul's letters today, so if you have your Bible, you can go to Colossians chapter 4. We'll be there in just a minute. If you don't have a Bible, the text is in your bulletin, and so you can follow along there. It's also on the wall. You can follow along there when we get there. Okay, so we'll be there in just a minute as it relates to Christian conduct. So to kind of lead us where we're going today, we always like to talk. So have you ever seen the movie The Outsiders? Some of you say yes. Anybody else see the movie The Outsiders? All right, The Outsiders, you know, growing up, we didn't get a VCR until like we were leaving. By the way, some of you, a VCR is like this thing that plays these big tapes. I can't explain it to you. It's like my dad trying to explain reel-to-reel to me, all right? So anyway, this movie player, okay? And so we didn't have one of those, so we didn't watch very many movies except what came on TV. So we watched like the Charlie Brown stuff, and we watched Jaws and all that, Rocky and all those kinds of things. Well, one movie that seemed to always come on in the summer, other than Gidget, was this movie called Gidget. I'm like dating myself now. Gidget? Have you seen the Teen Beach movie? Okay, it's like Gidget, okay, for some of you who are younger. But this movie, The Outsider, seemed to always play in the summertime. And so it's a classic movie. I like the movie. If you haven't seen it, you know, whatever, it's your preference. But 1983, this thing came out. And it had a lot of young stars in it. Have you heard of a guy by the name of Patrick Swayze? Patrick Swayze was in it. Emilio Estevez was in it. Ralph Macchio. Rob Lowe. Matt Dillon. You know all these people? Right? So there's all these kind of young stars kind of just shoved into this one movie, The Outsiders. Well, to kind of summarize the movie, the premise was this. You had two groups of people that hated each other, and they were high school students, high school kids. So you've got one group's called the Greasers, and the other group's called the Socias, all right? You've got the Greasers and the Socias. Now, the Socias were these students, these teenagers who seemed to have everything. They had money, they had the right clothes, they drove the nice convertible cars, they were on all the school's clubs and athletic teams, made good grades, lived in the right part of town, all those things. They seemed to be going for the Socias, okay? And one other thing about them is that they could not stand the Greasers. The Greasers were quite the opposite of the Socias. I guess they were called Greasers because of how they styled their hair back then. I've never done that, but you've seen the hairstyle that looks like it's full of grease. You know, all slick back. Well, that's how their hair was. It was all slick back, and they wore like blue jeans and black leather jackets and like white T-shirts with their sleeves rolled up and their cigarettes up here. You know, you remember these kinds of people? They were called the Greasers. Now, the Greasers were kind of a rough and tough kind of bunch. Didn't care so much about school. Grades didn't really matter. Didn't show up at school a lot of the times. Weren't involved in any types of clubs. Anything like that. The only thing they had in common with the Socias is that they both hated something, and it was each other, right? And so you've got this battle going on between the whole movie of where the Greasers are not allowed to come. You can't come on the Socias territory, and you can't mess with the Socias girls. And if you do, then we're going to brawl. And so they have these fight scenes and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, the bottom line of the story is doesn't matter where you live, doesn't matter where you come from. What matters is what you do with your life. So a pretty good little tagline to an old movie. But you might be saying, well, what does that have to do with what we're going to talk about today? Well, Paul, in this letter to the Colossians, is going to talk to us about how you and I conduct ourselves with people called outsiders. Okay? And that's his term, that's not mine. So how do Christians deal with outsiders? Now, one thing we've got to understand here, the church is not the group of Socias, right? We're not the group of people who think they've got it all going on, this exclusive club for people who've done well in the world, and everyone else who hasn't just remains outside. Now, there may be churches that operate that way. We don't, right? We don't work that way here, and neither is God's church wired that way. So Paul refers to these guys as outsiders. Very simply, what it means is this. There are those who are under grace, who've been forgiven. And so in the context of outsiders, it would make those people insiders. And there are people who are not under grace, who are outside of grace, who Paul calls outsiders. Okay? And so that's the context we're going to try to pursue today. Being somebody who's, by God's grace, is an insider, living in a world full of people who are outsiders. So if you have your Bible, let's go here to Colossians chapter 4. We're going to read the first 6 verses as Paul's going to give us some help here. A few reasons Paul wrote this letter that he states. One is to deal with false teaching. So here's kind of what was going on. These people had some about Jesus as their philosophy. They had some Judaism. They had some of their own opinion. And they put it in a bowl and they mixed it all together. And now they've got this new religion, or so they thought, called Christianity. Is that Christianity? No, Christianity means that I die to my opinions. They don't matter. So my opinion is replaced with truth. Okay? And so Paul's trying to remind them, you've got all this little bits you've got to get rid of so that you can reconnect with the truth. He's also going to remind them that Christ is their all in all. He's everything that you need. And he's going to remind them as well that you've been put here to live a certain way. And that's to honor God. And so one of the ways that I honor God is how I conduct myself with people that don't believe. And so I feel like this is fitting for today because of where we're heading this weekend. How do I conduct myself with people who don't believe? How do I interact with people who look at what I believe as phony or as false, or they find error or fault or loopholes or things in it, so they think? How do I interact with people who may be dead set against me? And so let's go here. Colossians chapter 4. I'm going to read these first 6 verses. He says, "Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. And continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Meanwhile, praying also for us, that God would open to us a door for the word, to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. And let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." So today I want to look at this. How can we conduct ourselves? How are we to work with, how are we to love and serve, live, interact with those who are outside of grace? 3 things we'll note here this morning. You can follow along in your bulletin if you'd like. The first thing is this. If we're going to live in a world with outsiders, and we are, then how do I conduct myself? I have to use some wisdom, and I have to be intentional. So be intentional and use wisdom. So here's the thing. If you look up this word conduct in the dictionary, you'll find several definitions. Here's a few of them. One of them is a way of acting. A way of acting. Okay? Conduct also relates to personal behavior. And so we can think of conduct in that way of thinking. But the one that I like is this. It's to manage or to control oneself. To conduct myself is to manage myself or to control myself. And so here's the picture. Conduct is not random, right? To conduct myself in a certain way means that there's forethought that's gone into it. I'm intentional in my conduct. And so I'm going to manage myself. I'm going to control myself. It's not just all over the place. Another way to say it is that I'm going to be intentional in how I live. I'm going to be intentional in how I talk. Very simply, there's purpose behind every action. So let's go back to the text. Look at the first half of verse 5, Colossians 4. It says this, "Be wise in the way you act toward outsiders." So Paul says, listen, we've got to use some wisdom here because you're going to be in a world that's surrounded with people. You're going to surround yourself with people that do not believe, that are out from under grace. As I was studying for this message, I read, as we do each week, several commentaries. There's one that I came across, Mr. Barnes, Albert Barnes' commentary. And he was dealing with the importance of conducting ourselves with wisdom. He lists several reasons, but just a few that we'd like to highlight here today. Why it's important to conduct ourselves with wisdom. And one reason is this. Those who are outside of grace will make judgments about us based on all sorts of things. One of those is the relationships that we have with people. Jesus taught this as well. Right? If you're my disciple, love one another. And by our love for one another, the world will know that He is Jesus, that He's God. And so how I interact with you, they can see and they will make judgments about us. It's also important because those who are outside are going to draw conclusions not only about us, but also about the church. So this week, we're going to be passing out cards. And you know what's all over that card? Sir? Our Peace Church, right? Everything you want to know about us is right there. And if you want to, well, not everything. If you want to learn more about us, you can find out how right there. WeAreAPeaceChurch.com. And we're going to have a banner that says, WeAreAPeaceChurch.com. We've got a banner that's got a big button on it that says, Peace Church. We've got t-shirts that say, WeAreAPeaceChurch.com. We've got cups. We've got balloons. Everything that we're doing in giving away says, Peace Church. So how we interact with outsiders, they're going to draw conclusions about the church based on that interaction. Right? And even bigger than that, they're going to draw conclusions about who God is based on how you treat them, based on how I talk to them. And so it's very important, Mr. Barnes says, that we use wisdom. Paul was expressing the importance here of using wisdom as it relates to conducting ourselves around those who don't believe. Something else he said is also important to understand is this. Those who are outside of grace are really not so concerned about our theology. They're really not so concerned about our doctrine. Their primary concern is, are you living what you say you believe? So you know what they're looking for? Integrity. So he says this is what he believes. He lives his life according to the Bible. Can I see evidence of that in his life? She says she lives her life according to God's word. Can I see that in her life? Their primary concern is not about our view of eternity. Is there a heaven or hell? Post, pre, amillennial? Eternal security or not? They're not as interested in the details as they are we living out what we believe? Now, are we interested in details? Sure we are. Things we can know, things we can't know. Right? We study out things. But what we've got to know is that they're going to draw assumptions about us based more on what we live our life by rather than what the doctrinal statement is on that We Are Peace Church website. Something else here that's important to think about in our conduct as it relates to outsiders. And this works with you and I as well, I believe. When we act in ways that are contrary to what we say we believe, then people tend to reject us when we try to help them. Right? I mean, it's like the person, we've said this before and you've heard it long before I was ever here, who's smoking like crazy or drinking like crazy and they're looking at you going, don't smoke, don't drink. Are you buying it? No. So let's put ourselves into a scenario. I love to put you in stories with me. And so let's tell a little story about ourselves. Let's say here, Friday, we show up at party at the beach and we're going to park our car. And so there's a spot and we're in line waiting for it. Well, somebody comes zooming in and gets into it right before us. And they get out of their car and they look at us and they're like, yeah, I got you. What are you going to say? How are we going to respond? Well, since I didn't talk to you this week, I'm going to tell you how we're going to respond. Let's say that we get a little bit frustrated. You knew I was sitting here. I had my blinker on. You saw me waiting. How rude can you be? Oh, outsiders. About an hour later, here comes this family or this person walking down Bender Row, and they stop at a booth labeled Peace Church, and we're going to hand them a card. And on the back of the card, it says, we're just showing you God's love in a practical way. Are they buying it? No. Right? Because they've already been turned off by how we've already treated them. So if I'm rude to you, I'm disrespectful to you, then I'm going to try to sit and talk to you about Jesus. It's not going to fly. So do you begin to see, and you probably know this already, I just want to remind us of the importance of how we live our lives among those who don't believe. You might say, well, that's not fair. They shouldn't make judgment. Well, it's not fair. Is it fair that somebody who's young dies of cancer? No. Is it fair that kids grow up without parents? No. Is it fair that people go to bed every night without any food in their belly for the day? No. That's a sinful world that we live in. So no, it's not fair for them to make judgments about us that way, but it's the reality. And so it's very important how I conduct myself around people that don't believe. Because if I ever want to have a chance to leading them to the Lord, I've got to do so in ways that reflect Christ. Otherwise, they're going to remember the little incident. Remember when he yelled at us because we took his parking spot? One other thing to think about here. Using wisdom and conduct, being intentional. The reason we do it is because no one who lives their life with inconsistencies will find confidence to do what God wants them to do. So let's word it this way. If my life, I'm not following the Lord as I feel like I should, when it comes to me doing what God has asked me to do, I'm going to lack confidence to do that. I'm going to feel like I'm unworthy. Now, I've been sinning like crazy this week. Who am I to talk to somebody about Jesus? I can't even read my Bible each day. Who am I to talk to somebody about Jesus? Man, I've been as stingy with my money as anybody on the planet. And so our own inconsistencies, when I do not behave with wisdom, my own inconsistency limits me. It's my boundary. It creates this lack of confidence within me where I do nothing. Where I do nothing. And one thing I want to reinforce here is this. And we could also talk about the importance of using wisdom as it relates to their influence on us, right? So the way that they're talking, don't let that peel off on you and you start taking on their way of talking. Their rudeness or whatever. Whatever it is that's ungodly there, don't let that be the influence in your life. So use wisdom there as well. But what I want to remind us of is this. Within these walls, there is grace, right? Within these walls, there's mercy. So when we look at each other, when you walked in the door this morning, none of us thought, oh, you better be perfect. You had better be perfect or you're getting called out today. Anybody feel that way? I hope not. I hope when you come in here, you can find that there is some ability to relax. Not your standards, not your morals, but just to come in and know that where I have failed, there is, yes, somebody's going to hold me accountable, but there's also grace and mercy and forgiveness for those things. When you get outside the walls, not so much. And so Paul makes the emphasis here, not the church family, but how we act with people who are not a part of the family. Use great wisdom as it relates to how we conduct ourselves with outsiders. And so is the call to be perfect? Right? None of us are perfect. However, that's not our excuse either. We're not going to allow that to be an excuse here. So if you're going to start telling me, well, Pastor Corey, it's just my personality. I'm going to blow you up. And not Duck Dynasty style where parts go everywhere. I'm going to blow up that way of thinking. Because God didn't come to work within the context of my personality, my own attitudes. God came to transform me. So when I say, well, I've just made that way, I'm going to say, that's just like putting your hand up to God going, change me if you can. So we'll blow that kind of way of thinking up here. So I'm not going to allow perfection or the lack of to be an excuse in my life or your life. However, that should be what we aim for. 2 Corinthians 13, Paul's getting ready to wind up a letter to the Corinthians. And three little words he posts towards the end of that letter. Verse 11, 2 Corinthians 13, 11 says, aim for perfection. Don't aim for good, because nobody on the planet knows how good enough good is. Is 50% good enough? We don't know. Is 99% good enough? We don't know. All we know is we need to aim for perfection. And so when I think about my conduct towards outsiders, that's got to be my mindset. That's got to be my mindset. I've got to be thinking about living like Christ. All right, secondly, we need to make the most of every opportunity. Use wisdom in your conduct with outsiders. Some of your translations will say redeeming the time or making the most of every opportunity. Now, we've been preparing quite a bit for this weekend, Friday and Saturday, this event that's coming up. You've seen signs posted around town. You've received emails. You've heard us announce it here. You've seen it on your bulletin or in the slides. You should have a clue that there is something going on this weekend. We've spent a lot of time in prayer. We've given money. We've made some purchases. We're going through the process of finalizing plans. How many days does Party at the Beach last? Our involvement, anyway. 2 days. Friday, Saturday. How many days until Friday? What is it? Counting today, we've got 5 days. All right? So what I'm trying to say is this. Do we live to just make the most of every event? We're talking about Party at the Beach, and that's coming up Friday and Saturday, but what about the rest of Sunday? Monday. Does it mean we're off duty? Put on our Christian clothes on Friday and step out and da-da-da-da, super Christian. Doesn't work that way. So I hope you begin to see what I probably don't say very well around here is that we don't live our lives by the back of a church bulletin. What you find on the back of a church bulletin are events. Party at the beach. Homecoming. Back to church Sunday. Some sort of fall event. Operation Christmas Child. Christmas Project. Whatever it is that we're doing. Those are all events and they come and go. What Paul says is not make the most of every event. He says make the most of every opportunity. Let's go back to verse 5 and you'll see that right there. Colossians 4, the second half of verse 5. Use wisdom in your conduct with outsiders and make the most of every opportunity. So in the context, here's what this literally means. Use every opportunity you have with outsiders by doing good to them. Use every opportunity you have with people who are not under grace to do good to that person. How many opportunities? Every. Every opportunity. And one of the things I love about Paul is that he lives this out himself. He's like Jesus in that context, as we all should be. Not just hearers, but doers of what the Word says. Are we only to do good to the outsider? Am I to neglect you to love somebody else? No. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, Paul writes, and he says, therefore, he says, let's think about it. As we have, what's that word? As we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. So who are we to especially be good to? To each other, to the church family. Especially good here. But not here only. We're to be good to everyone. Every opportunity you have, let us do good to all people. And so as I was saying, I love about Paul, he didn't just say it, but he did it. Same thing with Jesus. Jesus wasn't somebody who just said, this is how you should live. He came and walked and lived it, demonstrated it by his life. 1 Corinthians 9:22. Paul's attitude in this is not just go live it. He says, I've become all things to all people, so that by all possible means, I might save some. Become all things to all people, so that by all possible means, I might save some. So we see Paul is using wisdom. He's managing, he's controlling himself. He's intentional in his interaction with outsiders, right? He's looking for ways to make those opportunities happen. See, being a disciple requires me to make the most of every opportunity that I have. With you, absolutely, and also with those who do not believe. So did you catch what's implied in the context of that verse? if I'm to do good with the outsiders, it's implying that somewhere there's going to be an intersection between my life and theirs. Right? Somewhere our paths need to cross. Not by just some kind of random chance, although that happens. What this directive here is go. See, when I read the Great Commission, it doesn't say sit and wait. It says get up and go. I've saved you and now I'm sending you. So I didn't save you to sit and wait for somebody to come to you. I've saved you, so now you will go out and be light. The directive is every one of our lives need to be interacting with people that don't believe. Paul's assuming that. And so the idea of me building a Christian bubble or a holy huddle kind of idea, that's a foreign concept to the Bible. You don't find that in the confines of Scripture. So here's the thing. If I'm going to say the only people that I'm going to be friends with are people who think the way that I do, does that sound like Jesus? The only people I'm going to interact with, as long as you and I have the same political views, I'll talk to you. And as long as you and I have the same idea about parenting, I'll talk to you. And as long as you and I have the same philosophy about extracurriculars, sports, music, drama, whatever, as long as we agree, then you can get into my bubble. But if we don't agree, then you need to go. Does that sound like a foreign concept to the Bible? Within this room, we all have children and we have grandchildren. If I was going to say to my children or to my grandchildren, the only people that you are allowed to talk to are other Christians, I'm only partly right. The only influence that you can have in your world are people who believe the Bible the way that we believe it, then I'm only partly right. Don't misunderstand me. Is it important that we have the right influence around our children? You better believe it, because they're impressionable. And so, yes, we work to protect them. But if Christ is in them, you know what they are? Light. So just as I have been created, and this is hard for me sometimes because I want to protect and keep my hand on them. Just as Christ is in me and can protect me and can keep me when I'm involved with people that don't believe, He can do the same thing with my children. Now, am I saying make their best friends children that don't believe? No. Again, we've got to use wisdom here. So I'm not trying to downplay the importance of having the closest relationships being Christians. What I'm saying is what Paul is implying. Somewhere all of our lives need to intersect with people that don't believe. So think of it this way. If we're all lights and all the lights do is hang out with the lights, then who's going to the darkness? I think the silence is a resounding no one. No one's going. And yet Paul says use wisdom in how we conduct ourselves with those who are outside. See, wisdom doesn't just wait. Wisdom doesn't just say, hey, I know that I should be interacting with people that don't believe. To make the most of every opportunity means I'm going to pursue that. See, isn't it true that you and I are to be a reflection of Jesus Christ? That's true. Did Jesus pursue us? What if Christ would have just sat on His throne in heaven next to His Father and said, hey, let's see if they can get here. Let's just have a little fun, Dad. Let's see if they can get here. Could any of us make it? No. Try as hard as we possibly could, none of us would be able to reach the Father. So for me to sit back and unlock doors and just wait for people to walk in so I can tell them about Jesus, that's the rare opportunity around here. That's the rare opportunity at my house. I have yet to have somebody knock on my front door and say, would you just please tell me about Jesus? The moments that I have had to talk with people have been when I have sought them, when I have pursued them, whether it was over the fence, across the street, stopping on a jog, at the grocery store, at a stoplight, wherever it was, it was because I was pursuing that person. So when he says, make the most of every opportunity, what he is saying is that we've got to be pursuers of the outsiders. Somewhere in our lives have got to be connections with people that just don't believe. Now, I'll be honest with you, that's difficult for me. So get ready to blow me up. My personality is to shy away. Y'all gonna let me shy away? My personality is just kind of withdrawal sometimes. That's where I'm comfortable. See, somebody needs to say, no, no, Corey. What Paul says is you need to use some wisdom in how you conduct yourself with outsiders. So you need to be going to them, buddy. I know it may be uncomfortable. I know it may not be where you feel like you do your best work. Maybe your skill set doesn't push you in that direction, but it doesn't matter. Because that's what God is requiring. That's what God's asking of you. Man, you all made me blow myself up. Paul was a pursuer of people. I've become all things to all people so that by all means possible I might save some. He's just a reflection of Christ. Make the most of every opportunity. And then third here, all right, use wisdom in your conduct. Make the most of every opportunity, but now we need to think about how we're going to talk. Think about how we interact with people. Let our speech be with grace. And the picture here is this. It's when I interact with all people, but here specifically outsiders, my tongue should be a reflection of respect. My tongue should be a reflection of kindness, courtesy, thoughtfulness. So when that person comes up to you and says, I totally disagree with what you believe, how do you respond? I think somebody can marry whoever they want to marry. I don't care. And you're wrong to tell somebody different. Is your tongue seasoned with salt? Is your attitude going to be with grace? Somebody offends me, and is my response to them gracious, or is it retaliate? You took my parking spot? I'm going to slit your tires. Now, I said it, but some of you thought it. And you've been in that situation. I told my wife on the way down, I'll confess, transparent as I can be as a pastor. Was cut off by an 18-wheeler and swerved into the grass. And was just instantly like, you idiot, is exactly what I said. And I looked at my wife, this was like 5 o'clock in the morning on the way home. Kids are asleep. I said, and that's why I won't carry a gun. And about 90 seconds further up the road, I felt like I feel right now. I was convicted all over the place. Was I worried about my children's safety? Yes. Probably more than anything, I was mad that he cut me off. And just showed some ugliness in my own heart. So my speech wasn't with grace. Verse 6. Colossians 4, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. You've heard the age-old expression, you'll attract more flies with honey. That's the word I was looking for. Honey than vinegar. And that's true. Now listen, we're not in the business of attracting flies. However, our speech should be attractive. And the way that I talk with people should do more to open a door than close it. It should develop a conversation rather than put my foot down, I don't agree with you, go away. I can disagree without being disagreeable. I should be able to disagree without being disagreeable. And so my speech, Matthew Henry says, though it's not always about grace, should always be full of grace. And what he's saying is every conversation I have with an outsider is not, Jesus loves you, you're a sinner, God gave his son for you. It's not just breaking down the Bible for them. Sometimes it's talking sports, or it's talking children, or it's talking how rough your life is, or how good your life is. So though we're not always talking about grace, my talking should always be full of grace. So my tone with people, my attitude, my thoughtfulness is to be a reflection of Christ. And for me, that requires a whole lot of what Paul was asking for here. Before Paul breaks us down, he says, listen, I'm going to go talk to outsiders about Jesus. And what I want you to do, I want you to pray for me, that I'll address them in the way that I should, that I'll talk to them about the simplicity of Christ. I won't try to complicate it. I won't speak over their head. Help me to speak this truth to them where they can hear it. One thing I have repeatedly asked the Lord to help me with is to prompt me anytime I have an opportunity to respond. And so I pray that prayer often. We have opportunities to respond all the time, don't we? Whether it's to a spouse, to a child, to a neighbor, to a coworker, to a church family member, we have opportunities to respond all the time. And so when that opportunity presents itself, I've begged the Lord, help me just to be praying, to listen, but to pray. So if somebody's talking to me and saying, or wanting to talk, hey, can I talk to you a minute? While you're saying, hey, I'd like to talk to you, what I've just said in my head is, Lord, would you grant me wisdom? If somebody comes and says, listen, I've got this problem, or looking for some advice or some counsel, while you're saying those very words, I'm trying to listen, but I'm also saying, God, would you grant me wisdom to know how to respond? When somebody's talking to me and has a difference of opinion, we view things differently. Rather than getting off, I have to pray, Lord, help me. Help me know how to respond. Help me to respond with wisdom. It doesn't make me anybody special. It just helps me be aware of my conduct when I'm acting with, whether it's insiders or outsiders. The bottom line is, I want my speech to be full of grace. I want every action and reaction to be that seasoned with salt kind of response that's thoughtful, that's gracious, that's courteous. It doesn't sweep things under the rug and act like something horrible is no big deal. We deal with those things. Man, I had a professor in college, Dr. Miley. And Dr. Miley would smile about everything. He taught all the sciences and biologies. And he would talk about how, and he was a doctor in Africa, medical doctor. And he would talk about how people died on his operating table with the biggest grin on his face. And we had to sever their arm and just smiling. And so we're dissecting frogs, and he's just seemingly happy all the time. There was something about his countenance that always made me feel like I was around Jesus. It wasn't gripey. Didn't complain or grumble. Didn't whine. Wasn't aggressive at people. He could have been, I'm sure. To me, he was an example of someone whose speech was seasoned with grace. So what we've seen here this morning is this. We all are going to have opportunities to interact with those who don't believe. And we need to be pursuers of those opportunities rather than, I hope nobody comes into my world who doesn't believe. We need to welcome those moments, pursue those moments, look for those moments. We need to have conversations with them. And in that conversation, I'm going to work to lead them to Christ. Maybe not at the initial stage, but somewhere along the way, I want to talk with that person about Jesus. And so what I'm wondering today is this. Who is or who are the outsiders in your world? Who in your life is the outsider in your world? Who do you know that's not under grace, that you are interacting with? Is there a face? Is there a name? Faces? Names? Not people I hope to or people that I'm praying for. I'm talking about the person that you have pursued to talk to serve, to conduct with wisdom. Who are the outsiders in your world? And then are you making the most of every opportunity with them? See, as we close here, what I want to say is this. Maybe you find yourself today as an outsider. Maybe you sit here this morning outside of grace. You've never really been forgiven. You couldn't possibly know how to treat somebody like Jesus because you don't know Jesus. Listen, God predetermined a long time ago, before anybody ever took a breath, that He would provide a way, the way, for us to become an insider. And God wants nothing more than for each of us within this room and within this world to be someone who's part of His family. Did God create the world sinful? No. He created it perfect. We made a mess of it. Knowing that, He's given the remedy for the wreck of our life. Knowing that, He's given us the solution for our sin. His name is Jesus. God willingly gave His Son to pay for my sin so that I could be reconciled, so that I could have a relationship with Him, so that I could be forgiven, moved from the outside, out from under grace, to now the inside where I'm under grace. God would love to forgive you today. It starts with recognizing that you need Him. If you don't believe you need Jesus, you'll never ask Him to save you. Maybe you sit here today and know that you're in need of Jesus. You've made a mess of your life, as we all have. Now, that's the thing about grace, right? Sometimes I look at people and say, man, I would never do that. What a joke. If it weren't for Jesus, why wouldn't I be doing that? I would never talk that way or go there. I'd never spend my money that way, treat my wife and kids that way. Why wouldn't I? If I wasn't under grace. So maybe today you see that you need Jesus. Maybe quite simply you'd just like to ask Him to save you. His promise is that if we call believing, then He will save us. So maybe you feel that kind of drawing where you feel like you need to respond. That's not manipulation. That's not somebody talking other than God's Spirit. Or maybe you find yourself sitting here thinking, man, my light's just not shining very well. All my influence, all the people I talk to are Christians. The only people I have in my home are Christians. The only people I allow around my children or grandchildren are Christians. Maybe today you see we need to be light in a dark world. Is that uncomfortable? You bet. Can God take care of you there? Yes, He can. Yes, He will.